Who are you and what do you do?
Yes, I'm Leah. I'm the performance marketer at Eva.
Okay.
That's what I do.
That's everything, what you do?
All the ads that you see with Eva, the Google ads, the Facebook ads, kind of have a little touch point there.
Nice. And I know with all these, we interview marketers. It's always interesting to look at people's like backgrounds. I always love looking at like early studies and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you were at the tech uni at Singapore, Bachelor mm-hmm. of Comms. Then it looks like you did some sort of an exchange scholarship in the midst of that.
Mm-hmm.
What sort of like guided your decision making into getting into like comms and marketing? Did you know like 16, I'm going to be a marketer?
Oh, definitely not. I think at 18, you don't really know what you want to do, right? Like you have an idea of what you like, what you don't like. But at the end of the day, where you go in uni feels really important. And it's going to, you know, everyone makes a big deal of it. It's going to shape your future. It's going to, you know,
define your life.
Yeah, it's going to define your life. So make a good decision. And for me, I think I knew what I liked.
Okay.
And I recall when I was 18, looking at the modules that my school at that time had to offer. And, you know, I was even thinking, oh, where should I go? And I was just looking at the modules and I was like, wait, I actually like everything they say. I like writing. There was a journalism thing there. I liked the idea of creating. So there was like filmmaking and, you know, there's that aspect in my school.
Okay.
There's the advertising PR side. There's the research site for the data nerd in me. It just felt like, oh, what a great little piece of who I am. And I just went for it.
And did you, what sort of like, I don't know, not courses, but what subjects were you doing at high school at the time?
What was I doing? Just like standard, like math, geography. It's nothing really relevant at all.
Yeah.
But at that time, when I was very young, I've always been doing like graphic design as well.
Okay.
So, damn. Do you know like Photoshop 3 and Photoshop 2 before CS was a thing?
Wow. That was, like, that's very early days.
Very early days with dial-up modem and like Windows XP and that whirring you get from computers.
Yeah, yeah.
So since then, I've been always looking and playing with graphic design then. And I think that kind of shaped what I liked to do.
Okay.
And it kind of that just kind of brought me here.
So you're a similar age to me then in that you were probably part of the MySpace era?
Friendster.
Did you like, because that was sort of Lauren, our creative director, my partner, she always like sort of similar. She had like this interest in design.
Yeah.
And for her, the thing was like, because we have MSN and then it was like a jump to MySpace and she loved having like the best design, like editing of her MySpace. Did you adjust all the HTML, CSS, stuff like that?
Oh my God, so much. That was how I learned. Blogs.
Yeah.
Blogs was such a thing. And I remember playing with like Blogspot and like blog skins and obviously HTML and CSS all kind of came when you create your page on MySpace. And so those were the days and it was actually good fun. Yeah.
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 Looking back at that time, you know, studying at uni in particular, like you've spent a lot of time in the business now. What it's always really interesting because we get queries from like uni students and so on, like, what should I do?
Mm.
I'm doing this, I've done in this internship. I actually had a young producer reach out recently just asking me about stuff. So as an example, she's been like experimenting with TikTok because she likes video. She's got her own podcast. What are like the resources you wish you had at that age that may have helped you get to where you are just that little bit quicker or have maybe given you that aha moment a little bit quicker?
Oh, that's a really good question. I think back then, I never really knew much about digital marketing. There wasn't any, it's not like now, you have all these courses, it's such a thing. But when I was starting out, there wasn't really much of that at all, you know?
Yeah.
It's a lot of figuring out where I wanted to go and just kind of learning online. And I think that probably is it, you know, back
just
then.
Just being online.
Being online a lot, just being that kind of digital native.
Yeah.
And these courses that are freely available, I think that if I did that a couple of years ago, would have given me such a leg up, I think.
Yeah.
Just the understanding of the space.
I think like, yeah, like what you're saying, just being immersed in it is like the best thing you can do. You'll find
100%.
Like, you know, because some people often recommend like, oh, you know, you have to watch Neil Patel or this person or whatever. And I'm just like, in my head, well, everyone's got a different personality that aligns to a certain person that they watch or that they learn from. And I've always felt that, yeah. And this is what I said to this girl that reached out is like, if you can just start doing your own stuff, it's probably going to be a lot easier to stand out.
Yeah, 100%.
Particularly when you go for jobs and stuff like that.
Exactly.
All right, so let's talk about early career decisions and the principles that maybe stem from that now today. So I know this is why I love having a producer because he gives me like a dossier and he saves me a lot of time on going through a lot of this stuff. So you worked at TBWA Group, Work Wonder, Media Freaks, and then Eva as of 2020.
Mm-hmm.
You've been deemed an up-and-coming marketer from your boss and others. If you were to boil down your own principles today that you've learned over that time, what sort of sticks out to you the most or that you sort of lean on the most inherently when you're doing your job?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
I think one of the things that I believe a lot as a marketer and, you know, I've 5-ish years experience in digital marketing, I'm not exactly the most experienced, neither am I the newest. But at every point in my entire career, I've never thought that I knew everything out there.
Okay.
I've never felt like, okay, give me a business. I have the magic formula to help you get like that $1 million in X number of days. And I think having that mentality as a marketer helps you be willing to explore different avenues, knowing that, okay, I've just got to test, you know, I've just got to try different things. I've got to always question the assumptions I have.
Okay.
And probably even like, not just assumptions about like campaign strategy and like what you do in marketing, but even things like creative assumptions.
Okay.
I think that that's going to work. And I think that people are going to like that. I think the process of always testing these assumptions is probably going to carry on with me my entire career. And yeah.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, because I was trying to come up with something recently. We did like a talk for a VC fund of early stage startups and talk about like what are the key principles. And I was trying to like figure a way to say exactly that, like what's the one thing that you can say from a marketing strategy point of view can you integrate and talk to people about. The other thing I always think about is like positioning. I think that that's what I notice marketers, but also businesses that have good marketers do really, really well is positioning. And that is probably one of like those second order things that you learn as a marketer after you get past that newbie stage is like, how do you not so much differentiate yourself, but how are you positioned in the market is like that. I don't know. We've interviewed so many different entrepreneurs and you always notice like the people who are marketers and who are not, they've always got like the positioning down pat really, really well. Are there other things that come to your mind that in the last few years have really stood out to you at all? And it could even be like platform specific.
I think the nature of digital marketing and paid marketing, it's always very reliant on the platforms and it's changing all the time. It's evolving all the time. It's hard for you to ever have, again, as I said, the magic formula, isn't it? And I really like what you said, the positioning. And it's funny how it's almost a marketing basics thing, knowing your target audience, knowing what's your objective and knowing, you know, all these marketing basics. As people kind of get into the hacks, the digital hacks, or like how do I crack the code and doing all these things. But at the end of it, maybe passing that is going back to the basics and going back to
that's so funny. That like you saying that reminded me of like something I said. Like there's I don't know if you know this. I've seen this trend of like they call them contrapreneurs, but they're like the people you see, like if you scroll on Facebook and you get hit with an ad and it's like, I will turn your business into XYZ, like $1 million with these, you get this many leads. And it's sort of, what is it? It's sort of like the silver bullet ideal. Like there's always one answer for something. So it's really funny that you mentioned that because I've had this like idea floating around in my head for a while now. It's like someone's always really looking for a silver bullet on a certain platform and it doesn't ever work. And then oftentimes when you speak to those people that are looking for that silver bullet and you ask them the basics, like your demographics and stuff like that, they can't, it's not that they can't tell you, it's just they forget that that is priority.
Still the core of what they want to do and what you need, you know?
Yeah, it's like your Swiss Army knife of…
Exactly.
Of marketing.
I like that analogy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good analogy. Hey. Okay, so… We've got your principles. It's basically always realize that nothing is perfect. Nothing is the same. It's always changing. I like that. When you consider like your marketing toolkit today, when you wake up, you'd have many dashboards, right? But like, what's the thing that you always go back to and look to? For me, it's like emails and then… like our project management dashboard, which is like monday.com. What is it for you in particular that you're always looking at?
I reckon as a performance marketer, it would have to be the ads back in itself, the ROAS and all the acronyms are going to start coming out. But, you know, CPA, ROAS, and I think these are the numbers that are core to my job.
Yeah. So when you wake up, you're sitting on your phone in bed, it's checking out stuff like that.
Looking at revenue numbers, that little, you know, swipe, you can see that Shopify little widget.
Yeah.
So, that's always fun. I think that's a fun part of being a performance marketer.
Yeah.
Just like getting that, results.
I was intrigued when I was looking at, because, you know, marketers, you can really go in-house or you can go to an agency.
Yeah.
So we've got TBWA, intern, digital marketing exec, digital marketing specialist. And there, so Eva seems to be the first in, is that the first in-house role?
Actually, I've had little stints at on the client side before, but the majority of my digital marketing experience was previously in agencies.
Agencies. Mm-hmm. What intrigues you the most about in-house versus agencies?
There's pros and cons to both, right? Like there's benefits of agencies, there's benefits of being on the client side. But one thing that I really enjoy now that I'm on the client side is seeing behind the scenes. So previously,
like product stuff,
ops stuff, you know, things beyond just the marketing itself.
Yeah.
And I think that's very integral to a brand. You know, it's not just marketing. Marketing is not going to get you your brand to where you want to be if that's the plan for it. Mm. But it's everything that goes on behind. And being able to be part of that, I think, has been the biggest eye-opener.
Yeah. Yeah, I've always wondered how can agencies be better at that? Like it is 100%. Like if I think about it now, all the marketers we've interviewed, you're the third. Actually, everyone's been in-house. And I've just always wondered like how do you get as an agency better seeing all that sort of stuff? It's hard because sometimes as well you've got to build up trust with the client sort of see that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there's IP involved and all that sort of stuff.
Exactly.
If you were, let's say an agency approached you and said, I want to learn more about this sort of stuff, how can they do that better for you guys? How can they be more trustworthy for a brand and for an in-house team?
If I can draw my previous experience in my agency, my previous boss was really good at building that rapport with the clients. All the clients that I previously worked at my agency, they were all like long-time clients. They were with us for years. And I felt back in my experience, I was almost part of like six different marketing teams.
Okay.
And I was really, really with them and chartering their growth as a company and listening to their strategy beyond just what are you going to do? What ad are you going to post on Facebook?
Mm.
And the process of getting there, it's not going to be a, trust me, you know,
There's no silver bullet.
Back to that, there's no silver bullet. So building that rapport and showing that we at that time had value to add because we have that marketing expertise, we had that experience with just such a wide variety of companies and what from small companies, startups, all the way to like the big MNCs and listed companies.
Yeah.
And all that means something to your marketing strategy and perhaps the bigger of your company as well. So,
So there's no one way about it. It's just get in there with them, get in the trenches basically.
I think so.
Let's talk about the Eva product because Amanda was very kind to meet with me the other week and talk pretty deeply about it. I know that there's a really big emphasis now on differentiation in a market that started getting more and more competitive. We've gone through that stage of like initially, okay, this is a thing that you can buy online and it's very approachable, it's very achievable. I was saying to her when we caught up for coffee that like I need a new mattress, I need a new bed. I'm like, hey, bundles. So, you know, I was chatting to her offline. When I think of Eva, I think of home more than the other brands because of some of the things that you guys have going on. I know that you've just expanded to include sofas and gradually there will be other items of the home to include in that. How do you think about differentiation from a performance marketing perspective? Because this is the bit where I'm learning the most at the moment. You know, we've got a paid media specialist, we've got a copywriter and myself, and we're working on a alcohol campaign as an example. We're just trying to find that thing that makes that consumer realize this is different to that product. And it's not easy at all. Like it's a lot of finessing, it's a lot of iterating and stuff like that. So are there certain things that you lean on in particular for Eva? Is it because it's an e-commerce brand that you lean on those things? How do you think about that product differentiation?
If you have the answer, let me know. Yeah. No, I think we are definitely in that growth stage where we are finding out as well, figuring things out as well. And I think at the end of the day, leaning back on what the company was built on and what we believe as a company, we believe in that simple, honest product. It's nothing, we're not going to be tongue-in-cheek. We're not going to be some fancy jargon you can't understand.
Yeah.
Not naming names here, but but it's about
that. I know what you mean.
Simple products that gets things done. It's there when you know how like certain things, it's like sound in podcasts.
Yeah.
When it's good, you don't realize that. But when it's bad, ooh.
You realize it a lot.
You really, really realize that. And I think that's what we want our furniture to be. It's just there. It's doing a great job.
Yeah.
But it's so simple, you don't even realize that. It's just part of your life. So,
There was, God, what did I say to Amanda over text? It was like the difference between a house and a home. That was what it was.
Yeah.
I often think about that when I think about you guys and look at the brand because, you know, if you look at you in the market, like it's a lot of companies that are heavily either VC funded or they're basically like backed by some sort of corporate or they're a multinational of some kind.
Mm.
And this business is like completely bootstrapped, which is crazy because it's such to be e-commerce bootstrapped, I can't really think of many others that are like that. Like maybe Broza before they got the VC round, July just before they got an investment from Strand Bags. So it's quite interesting to see that differentiation. I think people would be very surprised at the differences between Eva and the other brands in the market.
I
learn a lot about the differences between physical and digital products. And obviously the physical one is you get a bed, you get a frame, you get sheets, whatever it may be. And then the digital product, which is somewhat new, but the idea of bundles, which would be very handy for you as a digital marketer because if you can acquire someone and pay more than the market, you can outgun that market for getting that user, knowing that on the back end, hey, they can actually get sheets, the bed frame, whatever it may be. Has that helped you or how have you started to lock in the cost per acquisition to try and beat out some of the competitors in this space?
Mm. I guess it's the average order value, isn't it? Like what is trying to increase that number so you kind of getting the most of every order that you get.
Yeah.
I think that comes a lot with diversification of the product as well and our product lines. But
in other items that are available.
Exactly. Yeah. Having that kind of diversified product lines, that's always great. But in terms of cost per acquisition, it's very much dependent on where the company is at as well, I guess. If you're really gunning for that growth in the beginning, perhaps it's okay if it's a little bit higher and then you can kind of always try and decrease that as time goes by.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that makes sense. I think that's like the only way to do it. It's something I've learned recently from when I had Zoe in here is like that order value. She was particularly talking about, she probably meant the same thing though, but like the cart value or like the average cart size and stuff like that, because they've got, they're in a real tricky spot because beds, everyone needed a new bed. Well, I bought new furniture during the lockdowns, but luggage, maybe not so much. Probably not going to Singapore, Malaysia, anywhere anytime soon. So they've had like a really tricky part in trying to work out how to increase that average order value. They were just lucky that they launched like a new product that you didn't, like it was a tote type product of some sort. So, but it's interesting to hear that. We talked about the acquisition and like performance type stuff. How is the marketing changing as the brand grows, as you get more people into the marketing team? You start to obviously think about more about brand marketing, which is something as well that Zoe and I spoke about because she sees herself as more of a brand marketer. How is that changing things for you guys internally?
Yeah. So Eva started out very much as a mattress-in-the-box company. That was the core product. And to this point, it is still one of our core products. But the diversification of our product lines into furniture also meant that we had to start looking more at Eva not being just the Eva mattress, but as Eva itself and Eva Home.
Yeah.
So that's that branding aspect and building that brand.
Did it used to, was there much language on the website in the ads that sort of made people see it purely as a mattress, or was it more just like a visual thing that you guys started having to change and like the creative or branding on the website and stuff like that?
Yeah, 100%. That was, we did a rebrand of our company as well. And even just looking at the homepage from back then till now, back then it was mattress, everything about like pocket springs and memory foam. But now we're slowly showing the entire suite
Interesting.
Of products that we have. So every touch point that they get.
How long ago was that brand, how long ago was that refresh? Because I'd love to go back on a Wayfinder and check out like the differences like before and after.
Yeah, no, that happened sometime late last year. I recall mid to late last year.
Yeah, because that makes sense. I guess like in the midst of COVID, you've got to rethink about what the brand is. You've got a lot more time on your hands. Mm-hmm.
And as the company grows, you know.
As the company grows, but you know, I can imagine during that period, I didn't really have anything to do but work. So you start to think, and the founders start to think more heavily about that. I know Amanda would have. So yeah, that's very interesting. So it would have been things like creative. It would have been the way that you guys speak. It would have been even the way that you guys advertise. How, you know, you're at the end of last year, this all started changing. I think you came on, when was it? So you actually did start in 2020. So initially as a paid social specialist, when did you start to notice like the flick, the aha moment where you guys realized you weren't just a mattress company, but maybe it was these other things? Was it a big talk by the founders? Was it something else in particular?
I think having the in-house product team working on prototypes while you're on your computer, you hear the prototypes being made, you see it being made. That probably is that kind of gradual
cross-pollination.
Yeah, exactly, that cross-pollination. Having that in-house product team to share with them the vision of what they're trying to achieve.
Yeah.
We built this product for this purpose, and this is the feature. This is why we did this feature. And that all kind of brings you into their ecosystem as well and why they did that. And that brings back to the brand.
Well, that was a thing that I remember Amanda mentioned is in-house, which I guess what a lot of local D2C businesses have really done really, really well is like your design or product focus first. But because e-commerce is so new and a lot of these brands are new, you have to like just go out there and be like performance-based. But now you've probably got freedom to start to think about what is the brand itself and how does this thing become bigger than just the first product at launch? Actually, it's really funny because it's exactly the same stage that July's at, almost, I would argue. Trends has been a big thing amongst product stuff. I was intrigued because we're chatting about buy now, pay later, and I didn't realize maybe how much of an impact that sort of stuff has on like, because everyone talks about TikTok, they talk about COVID, they talk about, you know, all these new things happening, like the media bargaining code, the iOS 14 changes. And I start to realize like a lot of this stuff is all just sort of fluff, you know, because Amanda says to me, well, actually the biggest thing for us is buy now, pay later, like for the last 2 years or however long it's been. So do you think there are other similar trends like that in the future for e-commerce? Or do you think that buy now, pay later will be one of the biggest drivers? Or is there something else that will start to really, that you've started to notice generally that could start to change consumer behavior in some way?
Of course, having these kind of like disruptive companies that disrupt the industry, like Afterpay and buy now, pay later options, they will always be great. They will always kind of fuel the economy and kind of like create a nice ecosystem. Mm. But I think one of the things that I did think about, thinking about trends, is something that's, it is trending towards. It might not be something that's exponential. It didn't just happen over time, but it's very gradual over time. Is, you might have noticed it as well, but about how dropshipping companies are slowly losing their place.
Yeah.
And brand and consumers starting to be more and more, they start to look more at companies and what they stand for, the product they're buying, from who and why, you know,
and that kind of made with.
Yeah, and that that product is no longer just a product, but because it's cheap and I get it easily online, but it represents who they are. That company resonates. Big brands, who gives a crap? That's a very good example of being in line with what you believe in.
Yeah, I don't know why I didn't think about that. Like, because if direct to consumer is becoming a trend, like, why wouldn't drop shipping sort of go away? Because it's sort of it's sort of direct to consumer, but they're giving up on sort of the best bits that make a brand,
100%.
Which then make it all volume based.
Exactly.
Actually, I know someone who we're catching up for lunch with some other founders who are in the e-commerce space, and I reckon they realized this like maybe 9 months ago, but he just never said it to me. Now in hindsight, like they did pants, like these warm weather pants that one of the founders is in Canada, one's here in Australia, and they had these like cold weather pants that like really well insulated, and they're really well made product, but it was all drop shipping, right? Mm-hmm. And then they realized, okay, they were having service problems. They had to invest in the service. So this guy, the Australian guy, came on board. He's now a partner in the business. So they invested heavily in that. And then they started to realize, we need to design more products because we need to increase our cart value. Actually, we're getting away from this drop shipping thing. Mm-hmm. We should invest massively more in this in-house stuff. And they've slowly built that out to now where they have like 10 staff, a bunch of different products. And he's gone. I remember when they first started out, he wouldn't tell me the name of the company because they were so paranoid about like other people bidding on the keywords for these pants or whatever. Like that shows how different drop shipping is. And whereas now they're all over social media in terms of their branding and so forth. I've just blanked on the name. They recently just launched it like North Side or North Co or something like that.
Yeah.
It looks really, really good.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a good insight. I like that.
Yeah.
So yeah, D2C, eating out, or coming to eat, drop shipping.
That's it. I would never say anything bad about drop shipping companies. No, I need to make it clear.
It's an iteration of a trend that was already happening.
It is. I mean, a decade ago, they were making bank just doing what they were doing, right?
Yeah.
But because customers are perhaps becoming more used to they are very used to the idea of e-commerce, and it's that next stage.
Yeah.
The next growth stage where you need to start investing in the brand.
Yeah. And, they've gotten sick of. Actually, it's such a good insight because Lauren's had this recently where she was getting a hen's outfit. So we've got our hens and bucks this weekend, and I reckon she ordered 10 different dresses.
And that must be fun.
I'm guessing you guys have like ordered dresses and stuff like that. It's like it's a horrendous experience because you know, it's always like totally mismatched to what the model's wearing online versus what you get. The sizing is always completely ridiculous. And then you notice a different. I think we're getting to past a period where people will pay $40 to $80 for a dress, let's say, they'll be happy to pay for 200 e-commerce style, knowing that the quality is just so much better. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what products like you guys and July have done really well is like we've all gotten sick of having to go to the post office.
That bloody slip.
Those slips. The slips, the drop slip, the drop slipping.
I'm in the house, just give me the
Just give me the bloody package. I don't need a sign for a piece of trackies or whatever. But yeah, that's really interesting. And sort of this is clicking in my head why Rich from July said to me, like he had like baby products, luggage, furniture, and like some sort of electronics that he said that was like the areas that he wanted to focus on. And it makes sense now because he obviously realized they were all heavy in the drop shipping space and you could probably just come in with this D2C model, invest heavily in that, raise some money or bootstrap it, and you'd have a much better business model in the long term.
Sustainable.
Sustainability is the big thing because you've got way more margin. It's not volume-based. It's way more experience-based.
You get loyalty as well.
Loyalty. Mm-hmm. You get way more on the back end. So, yeah, I like that insight. There's the clip for the episode.
Everything before, we're cutting it. It's going to be a 5 minute.
That's the promo clip. So last thing I want to chat to you about is like maturity of yourself as a marketer. You touched on it briefly. You're not a newbie, but you don't find yourself to be like truly established yet. You're sort of in this in-between period. I still have these as of like basic breakdowns. You've got marketers who are in the basics, so they know web, pay-per-click, social SEO, et cetera. You then sort of get up to the intermediates like yourself who would understand things like enhanced targeting, differentiation of brand and content and stuff like that. And then you get to the more complex stuff, which is where probably Amanda is starting to get to over time, which is someone who basically becomes a CMO. And a CMO, they have to wear two hats. They have to be both a marketer in a way, but they've also got to be a manager. Mm. So I'm curious, from your perspective, in the last 12 months, what has helped accelerate your learning to get most to increase that intermediate stage mm-hmm. of your understanding? And what do you think over the years will be the thing that helps you get to that sort of CMO stage?
Good question. I think it's a really fun life cycle of being a marketer. In digital marketing, there's so many different channels and specializations that you can go into, isn't it? As you get intermediate, it's probably about like that going, diving very deep, being that specialist and really knowing that channel or whatever it is. But then again, as you go back up and try and like progress with your career, then it becomes about diversification of your skill sets.
Yeah.
It becomes knowing beyond that one channel, but about the entire holistic marketing channels and like how everything interacts with each other, how every channel has its place and how to very effectively use all of that to drive growth.
Yeah.
So it's probably getting to that stage of really understanding all that with the help of specialists in the company. And
do you think that that's probably just a time thing? There's not much that can really accelerate it?
Oh, I disagree. I think it's learning, isn't it? It's self-learning. It's that interest in things beyond your singular role. I'm a paid performance marketer, but I would never say no to learning from my email specialist. Yeah. I would never say no to finding out why my graphic designer did this in a certain way because she thinks it's the best way to communicate. So it's that cross-learning that I think would bring specialists to the next step.
Yeah. And understanding when you can sort of start to show yourself as a leader as well, which is the tricky part. But something, again, you learn through picking people's brains,
100%.
Stuff like that.
Yeah.
Out of interest, at Eva, how many different specialists do you guys have and in what areas?
We have a email digital specialist. We have a full stack developer.
Yourself.
We have a creative, myself. We have a small creative team with like video, graphic and copywriting. We are quite a lean marketing team.
But that is quite a lot.
Yeah.
Like if you think about it, that's a decent amount.
It is quite specialized, but yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they are all specialists, but to have that internally is, again, that points back to the whole D2C model. Like that nearly covers every single, function of an agency. Like that's the power of that model is you can build all of that internally.
Yeah.
Which is and very
you have like a special someone who's really, really good at that one thing sitting right next to you.
Yeah.
And that cross collaboration when you do projects and when you think about ideas, they're going to have a different perspective to you because they look at different things.
Yeah.
They think about different things. And I think that makes it really collaborative and effective.
Yeah. I like that. Yeah. I'm very jealous of the team you guys have got. Totally. Leah, thank you so much for coming in. Where can people find you and Eva on the internet?
Eva.com.au is our website. I'm on LinkedIn. Yep. And
And it's Leah Ang on LinkedIn.
Yes.
We'll link all that stuff in the show notes if people are interested as well. But Leah, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.